Unveiling the secrets A-list copywriters use to make themselves and their clients millions. This is the Copywriters Podcast with your host, the world's greatest copywriting coach, David Garfinkel.
Let's take a trip back in the time machine. Nick Lowe had a big hit on the top 40 back in the day called Cruel to Be Kind. Interesting idea, but how about this one? Kind to Be Kind. Oh, there's a novel idea. And it's the guiding principle of copywriter and agency owner Kath Riohorn, who has taken this philosophy to £1 million a month in revenues for her clients. So you don't have to do the math. That's about $1.3 million per month. Now, how does she do it? Today on Copywriters Podcast, you'll find out exactly how. Now, back to the idea of kind to be kind. Kath's agency is called Kind Copy, and she defines the guiding principle this way. Kind copy stands for not twisting the knife. This anti-cruelty stance isn't just an ethical standpoint. It's a tactical advantage for services where the client needs to be actively involved in the process, like coaching and consulting. We'll dive deep into that in a moment. First, a little more about Kath and her business. She lives in Wales in the UK. She has a true family business since it employs herself, her husband, her sister, and two other team members. What's even more impressive, they grew with organic marketing to over £1 million a month before she ever ran an ad. And I want to assure you that what I'm about to say is not an ad. Copy is powerful. You're responsible for how you use what you hear in this podcast, and most of the time, common sense is all you need. But if you make extreme claims, and or if you're writing copy for offers in highly regulated industries like health, finance, and business opportunity, you may want to get a legal review after you write and before you start using your copy. My larger clients do this all the time. So, Kath, welcome. So glad to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me on. What a flattering intro. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so let's start with the questions. You have chosen as your niche high-end fitness businesses, and you said that you're bringing them about £1 million a month in sales. How did you decide to focus on that niche?
I imagine, like lots of us, I just accidentally fell into it. I was actually working as a health and fitness coach myself, and I was a fully booked gym floor PT. I actually spent 12 years working as a psychologist, and I got made redundant. And I just thought, it is absurd that somebody else can decide when my career is over as a professional. So I left teaching and I went into being self-employed, had this great in-person business, loved my clients, loved the gym floor. But I had to be on the gym floor to make any money. And that was restrictive. And I was close to capped out and I was still pretty skint. I didn't make a lot of money doing that, and I found ways around it. I could work it a little bit. I could turn it into small group, but I needed something that didn't require me to be on the gym floor, because what actually happened was I got flu, and it was the worst flu of my life. I felt so ill. Put me to bed for 2 weeks, and I lay in bed with this devastating flu thinking, oh my gosh, I'm just burning through my savings. I've got no money. I need to find a way to make some cash. So I never intended to learn these skills to sell them. I just wanted them for me. And that meant that I was around other fitness professionals. I was around other online coaches at the time. And they started coming to me to ask for help with their businesses. So I kind of just fell into it, is the truth. I didn't have this mega insight, this super sharp mind anticipating what was coming. I just needed to learn it. It was a necessity move. And then I was able to offer it to other people.
But if they were coming to you, it sounds like you kind of, I want to say organically, but that has another meaning too, but you kind of naturally learned how to promote your business as a solo practitioner. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. So I was using these skills to try to get my own online clients. At the time, I was writing for an amazing guy called Dan Salcom. I owe him so much. His job was to build websites fitness professionals, and he needed somebody to learn. He needed somebody to fulfill blogs and website copy. So I did little bits for him. And then I joined a mentorship to grow my coaching business. Nothing to do with copy. I just intended to grow my coaching business. And it became evident that the way I wrote was different from how everyone else wrote. So they came to me, and it was remarkably different in as far as the fitness industry at that time was quite cruel. So the go-to mentality in that space was find the pain point, press on it, apply the electrodes to the nipple clamps, you know, just really dig into the pain and make it as big as you can. And for that works if all you're trying to sell is supplements. But if you need someone to be actively involved in their own rescue, which coaches did, what we found was happening was that it was really pushing the reader into a deep pain place. Too much stimulation, too much arousal, too much everything, too much guilt, too much shame. And they couldn't act. And when they did act, they would see the coach as their savior. And then the coaches around them had, you know, clients who needed rescuing. They wouldn't take personal responsibility. They wouldn't take any agency over their own journey. And it was entirely their own fault, because it was, that's how you're selling the service as a rescuer. So what I was doing was empowerment copy, hope and power, never twist the knife. You come to us, listen, you probably know, you know what's best for you. Let's move at your pace. And that sort of thing at the time in that industry was quite disruptive. Most people weren't selling that way. So it got noticed. And then people started coming to me, and they would get a lot more inquiries because their readers felt safer. And they were much better quality leads because they didn't need to be rescued.
That's amazing. We won't, but we could stop right there, and that's like a masterclass. Thank you. Let's keep going though. What are you doing today, 2025, in the way of copy and strategy for your clients who are essentially in the same business that you were in one way or another, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm no longer working in the health and fitness coaching space, but the more recently we've gone into a service called Bottomless Brunch. And the idea is that coaches who have got lots of moving parts in their businesses and who need lots of different types of things come to us and get it all in one place. That means they only have to deal with me. They don't have to deal with multiple copywriters and freelancers or AIs and try to patch it together. And as a result, they can either get a lot of different types of copy and do a ton of different testing throughout their funnel, or they can just focus on one or two things and iterate and test and really hammer the things at quality so that they know that even a small funnel can be really effective.
Can you talk about the different types of copy that you might be doing with this service you're offering now?
Yeah, for sure. Like all the types of copy that you would expect are there. Everything from ads to sales pages to emails, social media copy even. But that isn't really the important bit. The important part of what we're doing is that we are trying to be immune to trends in a market that feels like it's very trendy and it's looking for the next big thing. When I was teaching, my background was in psychology. So I'm keen on building compounding trust with the market in whatever format that copy comes. So rather than talk about this in terms of ads or top of funnel or bottom of funnel or anything like that, we have found that the most important style of copy that you can create is really geared towards what makes the reader feel the most trust and affinity and resonance with that coach. We see ourselves as a broker to the reader rather than in service of the coach.
It's interesting. I've never heard that phrase before, compounding trust, and it's a great phrase. Do you want to elaborate on that just a little bit?
Absolutely, yeah. So an example in practical terms, a big issue in my market, I consider it a big issue, is that coaches are amazing speakers. They're fantastic on camera. They are good at writing. They've got massive market awareness. And as a result, they expect the magic bolt of virality to hit them like a lottery win at any moment. And a lot of what they do in their own marketing is geared towards going viral. I can't tell you how much of a mistake that is. It is catastrophic if it happens. It's a disaster. We actually had this happen by accident. We try really hard not to make people go viral, but this has accidentally happened twice recently. And I say recently, I mean like in the last 5 years. We try really hard not to do it. But when we do it, what tends to happen is that you get this huge influx of wrong fits. By definition, viral content has got broad appeal. We're not trying to have broad appeal. We're trying to have very narrow, authoritative, trust-building appeal. And usually that isn't going to come from popular, viral, large-scale takes. So that's an example of, in practical terms, one of the things that we would try to do, or try not to do.
I understand. Okay, so virality, it's interesting. I mean, to me, it's kind of like the movie star mistake. You know, movie stars are kind of rated and paid by how broad their appeal is to the largest number of people. In most businesses, we're not movie stars. I mean, maybe Tony Robbins thinks he is or something, you know, but most of us really need to be trusted by our niche more than, you know, followed and reposted by, you know, tens of thousands of people, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely would agree. And what that needs is, rather than a flash of brilliance, it needs patience and consistency and not jumping from trend to trend or niche to niche even. Like, that can be a problem for lots of coaches because they can help people in lots of different ways. They feel drawn to that because they've got a servant's heart and they want to help. They're great people. They want to help. But you aren't there to help everyone, and not all money needs to be in your hand. And I think that can be quite a difficult shift in beliefs.
No, it's profound. It's a good one. So let's talk about your philosophy of kind copy. Could you give us a couple of contrasting examples? This is the normal twist the knife copy versus this is what kind copy looks like.
I can give you my origin story, which is exactly that. Okay. Once upon a time, the fitness marketing online looked like this. I remember seeing an A board outside of a gym, and these were the words on the A board: tired of being fat and ugly? Just be ugly. Come to the gym.
Funny.
It's funny, but think about being the recipient of someone who is considering joining that gym. You've got, you know, there's a cheap laugh in it, but is this someone who's going to commit to themselves and this relationship long term?
So,
exactly right. And like, I'll be honest, this is miles better now. Miles better. I think we've done some influential work. I'd like to think we've done some influential work in that. I don't think you'd see that message now, but I also think that this is really just a below the surface belief. I think that does still exist in fitness. And in practice, that could look like fear-based messaging, magnifying a problem, pain amplification, act now or you're going to regret it. You can't possibly do any of this stuff by yourself. What a fool you've been to think that you could possibly manage something as complex as movement and food by yourself. So at Kind Copy, what we try to do is put them in a position of hope and power. I believe the future can be different, and I believe that I have the power to make it so. Make it so is a Star Trek line, right? I feel like it's important that they feel clear about what their role is versus the coach's role. And I like things to progress on their terms. So calls to action shift. On a purely tactical level, it's not act now. It becomes, you know best. If you think you're ready, let's have a conversation. And the bar is always quite low. Let's have a conversation. You're not committing to anything. And radical transparency for the next stage. So when you message me, I'm going to ask you 3 questions. Or when you book in this call, in the first 10 minutes, it's going to look like this. We're going to talk about these types of things, and you should be in an environment where, you know, you can speak freely, for example. That's not revolutionary for us, but what was happening in the space at the time was, you can't do this without me. You're useless, you're fat. This is forever going to be a problem. get it sorted now before it becomes, you know, a heart attack when you're 50. It was all that kind of language. And that was creating a lot of friction for people to buy. And it was also creating a lot of mistrust in the market too. There was no one able to really lead because it was all quite, it sounds childish, but it was all quite mean.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like a lot of people have just considered meanness a necessary evil in the way they do their copy. And you're saying, it ain't necessarily so.
Absolutely. I mean, it does work. However, you can also create sales and more meaningful repeat buyers when you don't lean on that.
I'm going to jump in. I think that in certain markets, especially like the red pill dating coach market, I see this a lot. There's this like negging where they feel like they have to, their target market feels bad about themselves. So they have to make them feel even worse about themselves. And what I've noticed is that will work on certain people, but as you were mentioning earlier, it's going to fill your list with people that are there. They're already in the mindset that they're going to fail, and you're going to fill your list with a bunch of failures. And what I really like about what you're talking about here is filling your list with people who want to feel empowered, which you're not going to get by using that approach.
Thank you. Yeah, I completely agree. I would say this is the difference between filling your list with people who are in a low emotional state and people who are in a high emotional state. Both of them will work. Both of them deserve to be served, but both of them respond differently to different types of messages. And an example of this, we had a client who served the 50 plus women's menopause weight loss niche. We were writing the organic copy. We had amazing relationships. People were coming to the sales calls pre-sold. The comments from buyers were things like, I feel like you've reached into my soul and spoken to me. Those sales were coming through social media with no call or through email with a call. When we outsourced, or when that coach outsourced the ads to an agency, there was a different person writing the ad copy. Now, the ads were working in as far as they were booking calls, but it was pain-based marketing. It was low emotional state. It was, you know what, finger wagging energy. We call it finger wagging energy, right? And on paper, those ads were working fine because they were booking calls, but they were booking calls with completely the wrong segment of the market. And every time this happened, we would, like, I thought about it like polluting our stream. We can't keep fishing in this pond when you keep dumping toxic waste in the pond. There's plenty of fish, but they've all got two heads, you know? Like, I feel like we're just populating the wrong people in our ecosystem. That was really hard to explain to the coach because it felt like we were blaming ad copy for no closes. And in a way we were, but not in the way that she thought, you know? It was quite a difficult message to get across because on paper, those ads were getting clicks and they were getting calls booked. And to the business owner, that can sometimes look like that's all I need. I've got a full calendar. But those are not your people. Not all money is created equally.
It's a hard concept for people to understand until they've experienced the better quality of life that comes from having clients that don't need to be rescued. Let's talk about organic content a little bit. Your approach is to use organic content to drive sales. You got to that million pound, $1.3 million benchmark with organic content alone. How do you do it? That seems maybe almost impossible to a lot of people.
I think there's some honesty required. I think in some degrees, I was quite lucky with how I was positioned. I was perceived well in one niche. I was well known in one niche. I also have absolutely zero reputation outside of fitness coaches. I'm not known. I'm not a known name. I also think it's important to know that lots of the urgency we feel in business is sometimes just an absence of patience. So we weren't really hunting £1 million. We were just looking for the next person to serve. What's important for me in this is that we hit £1 million from organic marketing. But what I didn't mention was that I only have an Instagram list of about 2,000 people, which means that we had monetized almost everybody on that list on average to about £750 per person. And what is more important to me than that number is that almost no one buys from us just once. So I didn't have, you know, £1 million, because I had £1 million people pay me £1. I had people who were on subscription services and who kept paying me. So I had a smart offer. I was well positioned. And I think there was some luck because I started my business during COVID where coaches were exploding. And, you know, that industry was really expansive at that time. I also feel like we always put the reader at the heart of everything we wrote. And if we felt misaligned or like we were a poor fit, if ever there was any question of our integrity ever, for any reason, under any circumstances, complete refund, keep all the work. You don't get to work with us again, blacklist. So reputation was a high priority for me.
It's a lot to absorb. I'm not dumbfounded, but pretty close. Okay, you said in a LinkedIn post, the best marketing isn't about manipulation, it's about change work. What does that mean?
So I think there are lots and lots of crossovers. It's such a peculiar area of my life where I've got this background in psychology. I've got this experience of coaching, and now I'm in this marketing space. And I think there are elements of all of those disciplines that are quite similar. I think this is we can talk about this in terms of identity-based marketing or helping people to make peace with the changes they need to make or helping them to grieve their past self or, you know, what they're going to give up as part of this new identity. But I think ultimately this is about manipulation. To me, is about you're broken and you need me to fix you, which doesn't help anybody. I think that's fundamentally not true. And if you believe that's true, you're going to build a business that everybody hates, including your clients. And I think change work is really about, if you think you're ready, I'm here to contain this process for you and to help you through it. And when you approach it like that, I think you resonate with the right people. I don't think it's about shouting louder and adding to the noise and, you know, dramatizing the worst case scenario of not acting now. I think this is very much a case of you are a high agency, smart individual. And if you want to collaborate on this together, I'm here to support that. But the change is yours. The results are yours. I'm just your guide. I think that's a really important part of coaching, but I'm only speaking from that one niche. I don't have insights into that from other verticals. Like I've dabbled in other verticals, but I certainly would not consider myself an expert in that.
I have a graduate certificate in coaching that, you know, I had for a year, mostly aimed at executives. And I said, no, I don't do that. I'm copywriting niche. But yeah, I mean, what you're talking about is an approach that I think a lot of people embrace. I also think, so Nathan and I did a podcast, maybe 2-3 months ago, about selling to wealthier people. And wealthier doesn't necessarily mean multimillionaires. It means people who are above survival, people who are, you know, have some discretion and aren't feeling, have discretionary income, discretionary choices to make, and aren't doing everything out of need and urgency and a boot on their neck, so to speak, psychologically. And I mean, that's kind of what you're describing too. And yeah, I mean, that's certainly the way I work, the kind of clients I look for and the kind of clients who stay with me a long time. But the way you're putting it, I mean, you've got such a clear philosophy. You've made it into a system with rules and guidelines and procedures, not a rigid one, but a clearly defined one. I really like that.
Thank you. It's something that I spend a lot of time thinking about. I've got, when it was just me, these things felt quite nebulous. It was hard to articulate this when I was in the business by myself. But as soon as I started to bring team into it, it became more important that we could make decisions without everything running through me. So these are the sorts of frameworks that we use as a team to make sure that what we're saying yes to aligns with the direction we want to take the business in. And also what we say no to is appropriate for us as well.
So I have a client, I need to keep the details fuzzy for his competitive advantage reasons, but he's spent, you know, easily 9 figures, that's $100 million on Facebook and YouTube and Google ads, and he entirely embraces I mean, I meet with him every 2 weeks, and we just met yesterday, and he entirely embraces this philosophy, does not articulate it the way you do. So I'm saying that if someone's saying, well, great, that works for her. She's a psychologist. He was a coach. She can do it, but it couldn't work. Yeah, I mean, he's in like the most mass in pain market you can imagine, and still able to do this very successfully. So
imagine how refreshing that must be for that market, who are dealing with pain on some level, chronic, psychological, physical, whatever the pain is that they're facing every day, to have one voice. Here's how you know this isn't a gimmick, right? Imagine if every single time you spoke to a person in your real life, one person in your real life, they said something negative that made you feel worse.
Oh, I've had relationships like that, you know. You can't choose your family. Yeah.
Yes, I too went to a public school. So any relationship like that, any reasonable person who is in a state of wanting to create a positive change in their life is going to eventually think, I'm just going to avoid that person. They just make me feel terrible every time I speak to them. Whether that's a conscious decision or an unconscious decision, it is repellent. And you know that that is true instinctively from your own life, because everybody has had someone in their life at some point where every time you interact with them, you're left thinking, that was work. I feel worse. I need to recharge. I need to sit in silence and stare at a wall and just come down from that experience. That your whole business is just relationships. So if you can understand it on a one-to-one level, you can understand it at a nine-figure level, because that's literally all this is. You don't need to be a psychologist to understand that.
That's very true. I mean, you know, we are, you know, as direct marketers, we are not mass marketers. We are one-to-one marketers. Many times simultaneously, a lot of parallel processing going on there, but it's always one-to-one. I mean, when a client of mine gives me a letter and says, most of you writes to an audience and say, really, do people sit around the computer reading your copy together, or do they read it one at a time? Oh, All right, so we're just about out of time, speaking of time.
I just want to kind of drill this home. For years, I've been leaning towards and favoring content over just direct ads. And recently, there's a new trend in Facebook advertising. It's let your creative do the targeting for you. And because of iOS changes and because of the Facebook pixel not collecting as much data on everybody's websites, and now they're moving towards Advantage Plus targeting over traditional targeting, a lot of what worked 5-10 years ago in Facebook advertising and Instagram advertising just isn't working nowadays. And we haven't been affected because our approach has always been create good content, the type of content you've been talking about this whole episode, create that and let it find the right people. Doesn't have to be, I loved how you pointed out the viral content. It doesn't have to be viral, but once the algorithm on platform knows who is resonating with your content, when you do start putting some paid behind it, it already knows who to show that to. And if you keep your ads from being the traditional spots limited, make sure you take action now. If you keep your ads in that form of content where you're, hey, here's three helpful tips, or hey, here's one thing that I didn't realize until today, but it took me 15 years to learn this, but I can teach you in 1 minute, and then a soft call to action at the end. If you keep your content that empowering type of content, that stuff that naturally resonates and connects with your audience, and you turn that into the way that you run your ads, right now, that's what's killing it for us. And it's a little bit sad to see that so many people are, now that everything is kind of changing, so many people are so slow to adopt this. But I love hearing that this is what's working for you, and you've also been ahead of the curve. So main takeaway that I think that people should get from this is, whether it's content or advertising, this is the strategy that works. And the straight up direct response advertising, especially on Instagram and Meta and Facebook, it's not going to work as well as what you've been talking about today.
Thank you, Nathan. I think one of the things that's important to get from this is, if you are sick of the constant hunt for the what's the algorithm doing today? Like it's some crystal ball. I feel like we're all so over that. Like my market coaches are so over it. I can't tell you how effective it is to stop hunting an algorithm which changes and nobody really knows what it is, to speaking to human psychology, which takes thousands and thousands of years to change. You are speaking to, rather than trying to speak to an algorithm or a line of code, you are speaking to, you know, an attachment style, or you're speaking to a worldview, or you're speaking to something fundamental about their state. That is so much more important to learn because you haven't got to change it every 6 months.
Okay, so before we're out of here, if people want to learn more about you or connect with you, what's the best place to find you?
Well, David and I chat on Twitter, on X. You can find me at Kind Copy. I spend most of my time on Instagram, Kind Copy UK. I'd love to speak to anybody, build a relationship, not sell you anything. Come and have a chat to me. Let me know what you liked it.
Nice. And do you have a website where people can find you?
Yeah, it's kindcopy.co.uk.
Nice. Okay. Go back and listen to this episode again. So much value and a major paradigm shift for a lot of copywriters out there. Appreciate you coming on, and we will make sure to have links to your socials and your website in the show notes. And you can find the show notes over at copywriterspodcast.com. And until next time, we will catch you later.
Catch you later. And thanks again, Kath. That was wonderful.
Thank you so much, guys.
Stop using the hero's journey in your sales copy. My book, The Persuasion Story Code, will help you put together stories that convince your prospects and resolve their objections. If you are a copywriter, you'll appreciate that every single one of the 25 kinds of stories in this book have been proven time and time again in profitable sales copy. But I've also used these kinds of stories to close 5- and 6-figure deals for my own business, and so have many of my clients. These stories are easy to create and easy to tell. They sound like ordinary conversation, but they are all designed and proven to lead to a yes. You can get the Persuasion Story Code on Amazon.com. So get your copy today. Hey, if you enjoyed today's podcast, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app so we can get into ears of more listeners. Thank you.